You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. My name is Joe Pritchard, and joining me this week, as usual, is our buddy Dr. Rouge.
Very nice.
I've been practicing.
You don't have to visit my office at 8 a.m. Monday morning for that.
All right.
You get a week off.
Sweet.
But we are sort of only Rouge and Blue tonight, aren't we? I mean, we are sort of missing, you know, one third of our alleged dynamic trio.
Yeah, he probably just didn't want to hear me talk about how much better my team is than his.
Well, yeah, but that's been true for what, at least 4 years now?
Yeah, it's something well, like that. I'm sure he's tired of hearing about it by now.
True. This is true. Or maybe he just didn't want to get into the whole, you know, Sutton no longer in Montreal scenario.
Could be that too. It's not like there's a lot good to talk about in Montreal right now.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Well, might as well just start right there then. Yeah. Montreal going into Winnipeg on Friday.
Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. Yeah, Montreal going into Winnipeg on Friday night, and Winnipeg beating them 31-14. This one, just simply put, the Montreal Alouettes can put anybody they want at quarterback, but if they can't block for them, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, they're not going anywhere soon. And you know, the thing that was frustrating, you know, from a Montreal perspective was that, you know, there was that little burst of energy that Pipkin brought, and there was a thought, you know, maybe there's a quarterback controversy here, you know, etc. Manziel gets a chance, plays okay based on what's around him, you know, plays the next game, is okay based on what's around him. You know, that's going to sort of be another theme, I think, even this week. He's going to play a game, they'll do okay based on what's around him. You know, the thing that I think was most striking about this game is there was a moment when Johnny Manziel threw a pass, and you could just catch his facial reaction through his helmet and mask, and or face guard rather, and you could see that he was sort of thinking to himself, man, I really am not in the NFL, and I'm really Texas A&M, and some of these receivers just aren't as good, and boy, this offensive line is making me run like crazy. You know, Montreal's got, what, 5 games left? I don't think there's a guarantee that Manziel gets through those 5 games unscathed.
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, his game is based around running for his life to begin with, but that's a tall, tall ask right now for anybody to survive behind that line. One thing I did like watching Manziel closely this past week, it seems like he can make that out pass to the wide side of the field. And that's usually the one that separates a potential CFL quarterback from one that just doesn't have the arm strength. I saw him do that at least once where it was just like, yep, that was solid. He can make that throw. And now let's see if he can put the rest of the package together.
Well, you know, and the challenge is that, you know, I mean, granted, it was pretty apparent that Standback is playing well enough as a running back that they were willing to part with Terrell Sutton relatively cheaply, I think, based upon the trade that went down a couple of days ago. But, you know, you look and you say, okay, why would you at this point trade a guy who for the better part of 3 years was your most pronounced and obvious offensive weapon at a time that you're still trying to put the pieces together to have something resembling success this season? Now, yeah, maybe the follow-up response to that is, well, Owls are going nowhere, if they could get a pick for, you know, Tyrell Sutton, maybe that was a good deal. And, you know, and maybe it turns out to be so. You know, the trade, you know, as it happened a couple of days ago, Sutton and a third to BC and a second going to Montreal, you would think that Tyrell Sutton might have been able to bring Montreal more than just a second-round pick. But maybe more importantly, again, it's sort of, you know, throw your hands in the air, this season's over, and what does that necessarily say, you know, to Manziel, who needs as many offensive weapons around him as he can get?
Well, it's saying that we don't believe in this year anymore, but have they from the get-go? That's a good question. I guess they are showing some faith in William Stanback. There's that, because then Stanback is younger pair of legs, and it's not like running backs last forever to begin with, so I'm not too weirded out by the trade from Montreal standpoint, which is my usual response to anything they do, so being weirded out, I should say. But
no,
in this case, I can see the logic. I can see the logic. It's tough to see that kind of move happen, but that's the kind of move that happens to everybody eventually. And this gives Sutton a chance to be in a playoff race again. Gets to pair up with Jeremiah Johnson, and we'll see how that goes. Whether BC...
It takes pressure off Jonathan Jennings. And, you know, as Jennings continues to step by step try to recover his confidence and that sort of swagger that he had two seasons ago, you know, somebody like Tyrell Sutton, even if he's nothing more than, quote, the backup running back, unquote, you know, he still brings something that can be, you know, really valuable to a team. Let's face it, 3 weeks ago, if we'd have said, hey, you know what, BC's in the playoff race, we'd have looked at each other and gone, huh? But you know what, BC's in the playoff race at 6-6. They really are.
That they are, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Winnipeg is a half game back. They have played one more game than BC and lost one more game. But they do have the tiebreaker over BC. So we're looking at the last 6 weeks of the season or so, going to be a race to the finish between the two teams and possibly Edmonton, who fell this week in Ottawa.
Edmonton at 7-6, and you know, the three of us, meaning Oz, you and I, from week one, one of the first things we thought was when Edmonton starts to get those defensive pieces back from injury, they're going to be a really dangerous team. If they can just hold on until they get those defensive players back. Boy, I'll tell you, when they get those defensive players back, the maddening thing about this Edmonton team is in their last three or four losses, and I had the numbers written down the other day, and I don't have them in front of me right now, they've had something like 3, 3, 7, and 8 points in the second half, if I remember correctly, in their last four losses. What the heck is going on with that offense that puts up all sorts of numbers, all sorts of yards? You know, the consensus best quarterback in the league, maybe the best wide receiver in the league. How in the world did Edmonton not get points in the second half of games?
That's definitely a mystery right now, and it's something they have to fix going forward, because their defense is not going to keep them in a lot of games. And if they're not scoring in half of them themselves, maybe it's them that falls out of the playoff hunt.
You know, at the beginning of the season, I didn't imagine that Edmonton would be a team that we'd be looking at and thinking, is it possible they're going to miss the playoffs? And, you know, do I think they have just enough of a favorable schedule going down the stretch with a couple of key home games that I think they're going to get into the playoffs probably as the third seed in the West? Yeah, I do. But, you know, let's face it, if this offensive blah that is the second half of this team in their recent losses, if this blah continues and sort of creeps into the first half of games or so, you know, they're going to find themselves losing 24-17 in games that most people figured they'd win 27-24. And you're right, that defense is not going to be good enough to give up ballpark 20 points a game consistently and give the offense, if it has a bad day, you know, a chance to not worry about it, so to speak. You know, at 7-6, you know, the schedule, only because they have a couple of important games at home, and because they'll probably play Calgary at a time when the Western Division race might already be over. Now, those are the things you look at and you say, yeah, those are probably working in their favor. Otherwise, Edmonton, you're like, oh boy. Maybe things don't break as well for them as we think.
Well, here's what they got coming up. They have Winnipeg at home next week. Mm-hmm. They have Saskatchewan in Regina week 17. They have mm-hmm. Ottawa at home in week 18. They've got mm-hmm. BC on the road in week 19. They have a bye in week 20. And then they have Winnipeg again in Commonwealth in week 21. That might be a quasi-playoff game right there.
That might be it. And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, I look at that schedule, and I think it's probably pretty likely they alternate wins and losses going down the stretch. You know, and they get to 10-8, and 10-8 is probably enough to get them in. Because, again, they get Winnipeg twice, but they get Winnipeg twice at home. And, you know, I think you and I agree that of those three bottom teams in the West right now, Winnipeg is the one that seems to be the most fragile, so to speak. And you know, if we're right, if Winnipeg loses the two games in Edmonton this week and then in the last week of the season, you know, at best, they're 9-9. And it's more like with a couple of other games they have in that mix, they could be 8-10. And 8-10 might not be enough the way that BC has suddenly turned its season around.
All right. Yep, that's something we will get into a little bit closer to our prediction section. But we do have your article to talk about this week before we hit our predictions. So let's move on to Saskatchewan 30 at Toronto 29. Did you see this one being as close as it was?
You know, I kept thinking, boy, Saskatchewan is just gonna hammer them. Boy, Saskatchewan is just gonna hammer them. Boy, Toronto has a chance. Holy cow, Toronto has a chance. But Daros might, nah, he's not gonna make that field. And here's the thing. Saskatchewan, any team at this point, but you know, among those elite teams in the West, but really you could say, I guess, any of the five teams in the West. If you're playing Toronto, you do not want a kick to decide this game. You need to put that team away because Toronto right now is one of the two worst teams in the league. It's, you know, blunt to say, but it's also, you know, it's also true. And, you know, where Toronto made the plays in the Eastern Final last year to get them to the Grey Cup, you know, Saskatchewan made sort of one really big play in the game against Toronto, and it was the 56-yard field goal by Brett Lauther. And boy, I'll tell you, if he was kicking it from 57, I don't think it'd have made it. But again, you know, all season long we've talked about how kickers just seem to pop up and make these unexpected or have these unexpected moments. And yes, I know Lewis Ward is having, you know, the season of his career, and his career's only this year. But boy, I'll tell you, Lauther proves that if you have a kicker you can trust, you know, you're in good shape. Remember, too, Toronto's two of their last three losses have been Medeiros missing field goals that if he had made them, they'd have won the game. Suddenly a team that is 3-9 would instead be 5-7, and maybe you say, hey, you know what, maybe they steal a playoff spot. But at 3-9, nah, it's over.
And speaking of kickers, let's go on to BC here. BC 35, Hamilton 32.
How'd they win that game?
Because Hamilton didn't trust their kicker.
That was unbelievable. You know, and I know June Jones is getting criticized up one side and down the other. Should he try to field goal? You know, blah, blah, blah. Should they, whatever, and all this stuff. You know, and I understand the criticism. I get the fact that the Rouge made a 28-20 or a 28-21 game 29-21, and it opened the door to the possibility of a touchdown, a two-point conversion, and therefore overtime, which is obviously exactly what happened. But, you know, think about the way the kind of season that Hirolahu has had. A lot of ups, but a couple of downs. It's conceivable that June Jones looks at this situation and he says, you know what? I don't want to put my field goal kicker in a position where he might make it, but it's really possible that he might not. The safe play is probably to punt. You know, and of course, yeah, if you've got Rob Mabel punting back there, you know that ball is going to go out inside the 5-yard line. Game over. End of discussion. But as much as you look at that game and think maybe Jones should have done it differently, that catch by Burnham in the end zone was just out of sight. You know, I mean, 1 inch more and we're not talking about the comeback. We're talking about Hamilton winning.
Yeah, but like you're saying, though, why not punt? Because then in that situation, you may still score that Rouge if Hirolahu doesn't hit the punt as well as you want him to. It could pin BC back needing 7 instead of 8, but needing 30 more yards. Or if it ends up in the field of play, you have a punt coverage team that is set up to keep Rainey from going anywhere and take a 5-yard no yards for that matter if you really need to do that. But I think I could understand his worry about not wanting his field goal unit to try to deal with Rainey. But why not trust the punting unit in that scenario?
You could make a legitimate case that kickers directly decided 3 of the games last weekend. Now, you can make the case that based on what happened in Toronto, that basically Lowther won the game or Medeiros lost the game, depending upon which kicker you want to talk about.
And I'd say Lowther won that with that ridiculous kick and a 50-yarder. I'm not putting a 50, Phil was a 52. I'm not putting that in my back pocket for any kicker.
Agreed. So I agree with you. But, you know, again, if Medeiros makes it, then we say, wow, he made the kick and they won again. So, you know, you can make the case that a kicker decided that game. Ward making all those field goals for Ottawa on another day when that Ottawa offense couldn't seem to consistently, at least early enough, find the end zone. You can make a case that he decided the outcome of that game. And you could make a case that what unfolded with Hirolahu and the last minute or so of regulation ultimately decided how that game turned out. And, you know, again, maybe a bit of a stretch, but I think it's fair to say that kicks that were either made or not made directly impacted at minimum 2, probably 3 of the 4 games last weekend.
Can you imagine an East final of Hamilton and Ottawa? In Ottawa, and it coming down to a kick?
I'll tell you, it depends which kicker's out there. I mean, you know, Lewis Ward, just as a joke, I sort of posted on my Twitter feed during a game, I think it was the game last weekend, in fact, I said, you know, Ward right now, top 3, top 5 in the most outstanding player category? And I was being somewhat, you know, just sort of flippant and everybody get a good laugh out of it. But, you know, realistically speaking, the guy's made 37 field goals in a row. Nobody's come close to that in the league this year, including your guy in Winnipeg, for crying out loud, who always is wasting Rouge opportunities. I mean, I think a legitimate case can be made that Ward might very well be, if not in the top 3, definitely in the top 5 discussion about most outstanding player, and I can't recall a time when a kicker at all was, you know, in that kind of conversation. So yeah, you know, again, barring the fact that if that game is being played as we suspect it will be, and if it's a mid-November, the weather could be tricky. I get all that kind of stuff. But if you've got, say, a 30-degree day, there's no wind blowing, Ward is lined up at, say, the 40 or the 45-yard line, and it's lined up right down the middle. And if he makes it, they go on to the Grey Cup. If he misses it, the opponent goes on to the Grey Cup. I'd put my money on Ward making that kick, you know, even with the pressure of it being the Eastern Final at this point.
Yeah. And you probably wouldn't do the same with Hirolahu, would you?
Part of me says his experience, I mean, let's face it, his kick essentially won the Grey Cup last year. And in conditions that, as you and I know, because we were both there in Ottawa, were nowhere near optimal. From an experience standpoint, I say, yeah, he should make that kick. But from the sort of up and down season he's had, I'd be less confident in him than I would be in Ward. And again, Ward's the rookie. You'd think it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, you would think that too, but not the way Ward's kicking this year. Now, we've got an article by yourself projecting the rest of the season here.
Oh, did that raise a few eyebrows, huh?
It seemed to, but anytime anybody puts any sort of prediction out there, it seems to raise the ire of whichever team's fans don't like it.
Don't like the answers, yes.
No. No. But, so what was your big takeaway from projecting the rest of the season?
Well, my guess was this. I started with the West and I started at the top and I thought, all right, right now, Calgary 10-2. Where's the possible places that they're going to get tripped up? They get Toronto and Montreal in the next 2 weeks. That gets them to 12-2, barring some sort of like, what the heck did we just see? Kind of moment. And then my feeling is they win the next two games. That gets them to 14-2, and by then the Western Division race is over. And my feeling was that their last two games, important, maybe, a lot of making sure that guys are getting their reps, and it's almost like a preseason game as far as I would be concerned. And then I could see that Calgary saying, we're going to take out Bo Levi Mitchell at halftime. We're not going to play Eric Rogers except more than a couple of series to make sure that he's fully healthy. I could see Calgary losing the last two games, and that gets them to 14-4, comfortably winning the West. But those last two opponents, on that last two weekends of the season, could very well be the beneficiaries of Dave Dickinson saying, let's take a week off here. And suddenly teams in the West that need that extra win, they might sneak one where otherwise, a team like Saskatchewan that I don't think will beat Calgary in a couple of weeks, in the game that ultimately will be the Western Division clincher, I think. I looked at Calgary and I said 14-4. And to me, it's they win their next four, they probably lose their last two only because they have nothing to necessarily play for. I don't think they're going to pursue the best record of all time, that sort of 16-2 kind of thing. I don't think that interests them.
No, and they would have had a better shot at it last year, I believe.
They had a better shot at it, yeah. And again, I think to some extent, too, the last couple of years have shown that you can be maybe the best team of all time in the regular season. You could put up all sorts of gaudy numbers and all of that. But you know what? You got to be ready for the punch in the mouth that comes in the Grey Cup game. And they've taken, two punches in the mouth the last 2 years, and they didn't recover. Obviously didn't win those two games. So to me, that opens up then what happens next. And I still think Saskatchewan is the best team in the second best team in the West. I slot them second. And I have Edmonton third because I think, as we said earlier, those two home games against Winnipeg will be so critical. If they were 1-1, all three teams might end up 9-9 at the bottom there. And then who knows what kind of mess that would lead to. But to me, Edmonton at home is still enough of a guarantee playing a team like Winnipeg that I still think is fragile, that those two wins get them into the playoffs. And then it becomes BC having a little bit of an easier road down the stretch than Winnipeg, and that's how I got BC to 9-9, and then Winnipeg in last at 8-10, and I'll duck now.
And I see nothing to object about with that projection. I could follow the logic all along.
Yeah.
The East looks to be about the same, except I've just taken a look. I feel like Hamilton's maybe a bit overpushed, but at the same time, I haven't stared at their schedule lately either.
Yeah, and again, the same thing there. The last 3 or 4 weeks or so, you know, the East plays the East, and so therefore I'm automatically projecting essentially that, you know, you play Toronto, you play Hamilton, or Montreal, you're going to win. You know, and I think the game last week that Hamilton lost in BC, that was the difference between being one game behind and being two games behind. And I just don't think with you know, only the five games left to play, that I just don't think Hamilton's going to have enough time or enough games, you know, to catch Ottawa at this point. And you know, and so figure if they split their two games in weeks 19 and 20, East Division race is over. And you know, if I remember right, the Red Blacks still have Winnipeg at home, I think. I think they've got one of the Western teams still at home, and I think it's Winnipeg. And you know, and if that's the case, I think that's good enough for you know, a win as well. And so I think those two teams finish a game apart, but at the end of the day, you know, that loss in BC is going to be large as it comes time to determine Ottawa, I think, as the Eastern the regular season champion in the East, and then Hamilton finishing second, and then, you know, Toronto and Montreal, who cares? I mean, it's awful to say, but who cares? You know, it's just not going to matter.
Okay, now with that, let's go ahead and talk about next week's games here. We did get picks from Oz Davis, our co-host, as well. He says Toronto is 13.5-point underdogs at Calgary, and he believes that Calgary is definitely 2 touchdowns better, especially at home, and he's taking Calgary by a lot. I don't see any reason to doubt that. Do you?
No reason to doubt it. You've got at least on paper, the best team in the league with a week off playing at home against a team that had a physical game on Saturday night, therefore has a short week, is traveling west. You know, granted, not as far west as Vancouver, I get that, but is traveling west, probably doesn't have a lot of fight left in them. You know, unless Calgary mails it in, and this team doesn't appear to be the kind of team that's going to mail it in, I just can't imagine Toronto staying close to Calgary.
All right, well, that one was easy enough, so I'm sure we'll see something wacky happen there. BC is 7-point underdogs in Hamilton. I don't know if I agree with that line. And Oz isn't buying the line either, because he'll take BC plus the points and for the whole thing.
I'm not confident that BC's going to pull. You know, maybe last week was an upset at home, maybe. But if they go into Hamilton and win, that is a monster upset. I don't see it happening. I think Hamilton will bounce back. You know, I think both teams are already in playoff mode in a way. I think that obviously for Hamilton, there is less to lose because second place at worst seems to be a certainty at this point. You know, so BC maybe has to be the hungrier, the more desperate team. But I think Hamilton's going to look at what happened last weekend and say, oh, no, we're not going to let this team stay in it. And I suspect the Ticats bounce back and win.
I have the same feeling as you do, because by all accounts, they should have probably pulled out the game last week in BC on the road in a place where they never win. And, of course, they found a spectacular way of losing it at the very end. I don't think it's that close this week where they even have that kind of decision to scratch their heads. And with the home and home, usually the second half of the home and home goes the other way than it did in the first place. So that's kind of pushing me over the edge to Hamilton there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I will say this, though. If BC wins this week, then I think a legitimate question has to be asked. Can they finish as high as third in the West? I don't think they can catch Saskatchewan, to be honest with you. I really don't think that they can get that high. But could they finish third in the West and get a home playoff game, which then basically means, as you suggested earlier, or not a home playoff game, would get a guaranteed playoff spot, essentially, which makes what you suggested earlier then even more obvious, and that would be that Edmonton and Winnipeg would be playing not only to determine a winner in the regular season, but also determine who the last playoff position was going to be.
Well, speaking of those two teams, we've got Winnipeg at Edmonton in the first game this year in Edmonton between the two teams. They will follow up, of course, in week 21.
Did that game end yet, the one in Winnipeg on opening night?
I think it did.
It did? Okay. That was a long...
That was a long game.
That was a long game.
Yeah. I remember waking up in the middle of the night, going to feed my little boy, and, oh, look, the game's still on. I've got this feeding loaves.
I remember you sending me a tweet saying, wait a minute, is this a replay? And I'm like, nope, this is still going.
Well, Winnipeg is 6.5-point underdogs in Edmonton. Oz is going upset because he says it would be very bomber-esque for them to win, but in doing so, helping Saskatchewan, because that would keep Edmonton off their heels. He's going Bombers plus the points and the win straight up. I, however, have been a Bomber fan for ever since Kevin Glenn was a young, up-and-coming player. So I'm going to say Edmonton wins this one.
I've said a couple times already, and so I don't think it's any secret where I'm going with this game. You know, I think the reason that Edmonton, at least I'm projecting Edmonton to finish third and Winnipeg to therefore finish fifth and not make the playoffs, is I think that Winnipeg will lose this game and will also lose the last weekend of the season with both of those games, you know, in Edmonton. The flip side is, if by chance I'm wrong, then Winnipeg is the team that probably finishes 10-8 and is the third seed, and Winnipeg would be the last place team at 8-10. And I don't think anybody would have imagined at season's beginning that Winnipeg would be, if we'd have told you at the beginning of the season, Mike Riley is going to be healthy, he's going to play 18 games, Edmonton's going to go 8-10 and finish last in the West. Would you believe it?
Nope.
There's no way in the world anybody would believe that. I think Edmonton, though, does win this weekend. As I said, I'm not convinced that Winnipeg's sort of inconsistent nature is a thing in the past. Let's revisit that conversation, though, should Winnipeg pull off what I think would be an upset. For right now, though, I'm pretty comfortable saying I think that Edmonton wins this game.
And Oz, it's more Bomber-esque for the Winnipeg to lose an important game than it would be for them to win and help Saskatchewan. Just so you're aware. Moving on to those said riders at Montreal. I think, Oz, let's talk about what Oz has to say first. Saskatchewan is 6.5-point favorites on the road. So he says, apparently the bookies are worried the Riders might party too much in Montreal on Friday night, but even hung over their touchdown better, he'll take Saskatchewan minus the points. I'm in full agreement. My biggest question is, how many times do they hit Johnny Manziel before Johnny Manziel is no longer in this game?
I agree. You know, Montreal beat Saskatchewan in week 3 or 4, whenever it was, you know, earlier in the season, that wasn't that the Mike Sherman couldn't get his headset off game, if I remember right.
Yes, and that was also the last we ever saw of Drew Willey.
Yes, and that was, but the Mike Sherman moment was just not pretty for television in any shape or form. I'm still not quite sure how they beat them then. And there's just no way they're going to beat him this weekend. No way at all. The thing for me is, I could see Saskatchewan only getting 20 points in this game, but I can't see Montreal getting more than 14 in this game. And so, you know, Saskatchewan's defense or Saskatchewan's offense might just say, you know what, let's just get to the 30-yard line every time and take a stop and let Lowther kick all the field goals, and they probably still win the game. No way Montreal wins this game. No way.
All right. Well, we'll see how terribly wrong we are when we pick the obvious thing and the obvious thing doesn't happen, because that's just the way it tends to be for me this year. But I guess I have one final big question for you. What's the over-under on Rouges this weekend?
it's not been a particularly good recent couple of weeks on Rouge's. It really hasn't. I mean, there were a couple in the Toronto Saskatchewan game that you know obviously made me happy. I'm gonna go with the over under this week being 2 for a total number of Rouge's. I'm gonna go with 2.
Oof.
Yeah.
Not a lot of faith there. Hey, Lewis Ward is on a bye. Does that change your mind at all?
No, because you know it wouldn't matter. He'd be good for 0 Rouge's anyway. I mean, so you know here's sort of my thinking. You know, Medlock had one last week and was angry as all get out. So that's not going to happen again. And the Paredes and Maver in Calgary, they never get a Rouge. So that's not going to happen. So, you know, my thought is probably either Ty Long or Liram Hirelahu is good for 1, at least is good for 1 Rouge, and maybe there's a second in that game. And if that's the case, maybe that sets up Medeiros for a missed field goal or somebody who, you know, plays a game in the wind and they get a kick that goes beyond or over the head of somebody and turns into a Rouge or something like that. But I've got 2 as the over-under this week, and I really want to be wrong, all right? I want to be like 5 or 6, you know?
That would make the doctor happy. Any final thoughts this week?
Naaman Roosevelt not playing for Saskatchewan. If Saskatchewan were playing somebody like Calgary, somebody like Ottawa, somebody even like BC, I'd be like, that loss might be, you know, bigger than we expect. And I think the other question that comes up too, speaking of receivers, and I'm curious to see, what happens to Daron Carter this week? Because he was basically a non-entity last week.
I just had this feeling he's going to be a non-entity for the rest of the season if he hasn't done anything
by
now.
I'm inclined to agree with you. You got a takeaway for the week?
That seems to be the big one. I'm just sitting here waiting to see how the Bombers are going to blow it this week.
Yeah, you never know.
No.
I mean, let's face it. There's been just enough inconsistency with Edmonton and with BC and with Winnipeg that to project one as definitely the third place team right now is probably fool's gold. The nightmare scenario is that somehow, some way, in all of that mess that is that can be those three teams, that they all finish 9-9 and one of them loses on a tiebreaker and doesn't make postseason.
While Hamilton's sitting there at 7-11 or some such.
While Hamilton goes 8-10 or something, right? because it's probably irrelevant. But I mean, hey, who's to say they don't finish 9-9 also? Who knows? I mean, this has been that kind of year. It's been that kind of year.
Yeah, watch Ottawa finish 9-9 too. You'll have, and hey, we could probably find a way to make the Riders do that. I wonder if we sat there and did the math and figured that out, if that would be a legitimate thing to have 6 teams in the league go 9-9. Probably not at this point, but we'll see.
Probably not. I mean, I think the only way it's possible is if Toronto or Montreal runs the table, because again, you've got all those games involving, you know, the Eastern teams over the last couple of weeks. If Toronto runs the table, and I'm not counting on that, because that would include a win against Calgary. No, I don't think. You might get 3. Weirdness maybe allows you to get 4. I think that's it.
Well, I think I found a new rooting interest this year, because I know the Bombers are going to break my heart in week 21. I am now rooting for maximum chaos for the end of the season.
For maximum chaos. I tell you, 3-9-9 teams in the West, that guarantees you, a crossover team, although we've been figuring a crossover team since probably about week 10. But, you know, yeah, one team is going to lose out on a tiebreaker. And I'm not sure I know the exact combinations of how those might go at this point, except for knowing that Winnipeg owns the tiebreaker over BC. But I don't know how that would play out with Winnipeg versus Edmonton versus BC, etc. you know, we know there wouldn't be like, you know, Major League Baseball with like a play-in game or something. That's not going to happen. Some team would lose out at 9-9.
Yeah. Gosh, at one point I knew that. I knew what the tiebreaker would have been, too. Maybe that'll be a next week thing where we discuss that potential possibility after I do some research.
There you go.
Oh, goody. Homework. All right, well, I better get off to doing that then. For Dr. Bruges this week, I'm Joe Pritchard. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Networks on Twitter.